listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Welcome in to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I'm your host, Don Knock. You can find me on Twitter, on the Air app, at Don Knock on both of those. We're going to start doing a lot more stuff on the Air app, so be on the lookout for that. As always, make sure to follow, rate, review, subscribe to the pod, follow the Launchpad Pod account. And the main Apollo account. We have a bunch of good stuff coming out on the Apollo merch side, the Jalen Green shirt, KPJ shirt, and we have the new Shingun Stretch Big shirt that just came out as well. Taylor Pate's going to be showing that off tomorrow at the Rockets watch party in Tomball. So we're going to shoot a bunch of pictures for that and do a bunch of promos for that. So be on the lookout for that. Joining me today, we have my fellow host, Prodigy. Prod, go ahead and introduce yourself to the people. I'm sure they're all familiar with you by now.
What's up, everyone? I'm Prodigy. You can follow me at Prodigy NBA. Yeah, finally changed the tag. It's easier now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's for the best. Definitely easier for everyone to find. And we're also joined from Prodigy's neck of the woods a little bit by our esteemed guest, Nathan Fogg of TN Rockets. Nathan, go ahead and tell people a little bit about yourself and tell everyone where they can find you and what you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Nathan Fogg One on Twitter. I'm from England, you can probably tell. I did the show with Jackson today on Mountain Rockets, which was about the draft, which was a much more like happier time. So now I knew we were talking about the Rockets, I've been to the pub and like had two or three pints. So like I'm ready to go. I got some alcohol in me, so I'm ready to go.
All right. Hyped and charged. I love it. And so, yeah, like we said, you can find him at Nathan Fogg One with two G's, and the blog is TN Rockets. So, again, I want to say thank you for joining us, Nathan. Prodigy really pushed for him to be on here, and I had no objection, though. I love his content. He does a lot of good video stuff and a lot of good X's and O's stuff, and that's going to be one of the themes today is X's and O's. Nathan is a really good X and O person, and I really value that. So we wanted to get him on there to talk some X and O's. We're also going to be talking about coaching versus roster construction, kind of the tinkering they did with the starting lineup in the last game, and a preview of the Knicks game. So a little bit of the rundown. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Nathan, since you're our esteemed guest, we're going to start with you. How do you feel about how the Rockets have started this year in terms of, do you think this bad start is mostly coaching, mostly roster construction, a combination of the two? What are your thoughts on how that balance has been going on so far to start the season?
It's been really bad. Speaking as someone who thought the Rockets were going to be like a 17 to 22 win team, so I think that was lower than most people. It's been really dispiriting. I think it's mostly on the coach. I think the roster construction isn't great, and I don't think there is any one starting lineup which is perfect in terms of like your spacing, your defense, and giving like enough playmaking. But as I've been trying to sort of change my mindset on this over the last couple of weeks, it's more about like, what do we do good? Like, what does Steven Silas's coach do that makes you like really believe in anything that is kind of happening right now, rather than like, oh, who would be better, or like, you know, what, you know, his hands are so tied. I think like he's got no sort of track record in the league. So it's more to me about like him proving himself and like, what do we actually do that's good? And it's not a lot right now.
Yeah, for sure. It's everyone's basically so down bad at this stage. We're really kind of grasping for what we can get with a lot of this Rocket stuff, but Prod, we're going to go to you. What do you think about, you know, the coaching versus roster construction? You did airspace earlier today, kind of on this topic. So if you want to, you know, kind of get back into what you said there, or, you know, bring anything new in, go ahead and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, man, for sure. Like you said, I've been discussing this kind of stuff, at least this topic, the whole day. And it just just really ticks me off the wrong way that people are trying to blame Stone and some of the players individually for what's happening as a team. I mean, if I had to break it down, I would say 80% of the fault's on Silas, 20% of the fault's on Stone. Just because you should have, like, unless this is, unless Stone is like having a say in who plays and who doesn't, because Silas is a smart guy, and I can't imagine that his rotations are fully coming from him without any like command from above saying, oh, you should probably play the vets more. They're not going to be here for long. We're trying to trade them. But just it feels really weird because the team as constructed has some clear, like some clear changes that could be made that would probably make everything a little bit better. I feel like Thais cannot play with another pick on the floor. It just doesn't work. They're not coordinated. Like they just get stuck in swinging, like swinging the ball around the perimeter with no spacing. I feel like an easy change to make is to start saying who's shown that he can play with Wood and that they don't get in each other's way, at least the way Thais and Wood do. And just run Thais off the bench as a sole, like, big, like the only guy, the only center on the floor when he plays, because people have been like talking a lot about how Daniel has been terrible for us, and he really hasn't. Like, it was a really good move by Stone. We got Thais by using a DPE on a sign and trade. So basically, he came here for free. We just pay his salary. Like, no assets have been used. No MLE was used. So we still have that, and he's averaging 9 points in 5 rebounds a game. He's shooting 52, 36, 78 splits. That's really good. That goes for 62% true shooting. He is someone that hustles a lot on defense. He is someone that can somewhat switch onto the perimeter compared to other bigs in the league, other backup bigs in the league. So, I mean, I imagine myself back in the Harden days, I would kill for a big like this. A big this versatile. He's a really good asset. He's one of the best assets we have on the team. If you're talking like 22-year-old and older. So he's making like MLE money. He's making 8 mil, then 8 mil again, then 9 mil, then 9 mil again with the team option. Just feels like it isn't really his fault. He's just been wildly misused, and he's been played in a role that really isn't his. And it's just really mind-boggling. That's why I put most of the blame on Silas, because he showed last season to be a lot better than he's showing to be now. And just something seems really off with what's happening with the rotations and with like who actually like who plays with who. Just, I don't know, it's really confusing.
Yeah. So kind of going back to Thais, right? Thais isn't an initiating player in really any sense of the word, right? Especially offensively. He's a very dependent player. You know, he's getting his points through slipping screens, rolling to the basket, you know, maybe some pick and pop type of actions, maybe, you know, short roll and getting into like a pull up or kind of pop mid-ranger. I think the problem we're having with Thais is that, you know, he needs people to really set the table for him. I think that's a little bit of roster construction, a little bit of KPJ. Well, obviously he wasn't there last game, but, you know, KPJ developing as a ball handler until he really gets to that level of shot creation for his teammates. You know, Thais isn't really going to be his best self the way he would be if you had like a James Harden running point, or, you know, even another mid-tier guard, even like a John Wall, who really can make all the passes you need to out of pick and roll. One thing I do have an issue with in terms of roster construction, you know, this team really doesn't have a lot of wings that are able to shoot and kind of defend big players. You know, Jayshon Tate, great player, but he's a little undersized, and, you know, the shooting is the hit and miss. You know, KJ Martin really has some potential as a shooter. He's shooting well this year, has some potential to be, you know, a bigger defender against those type of wings. But, you know, we just don't have a lot of wings. It's a very guard heavy roster and a very big heavy roster as well. You know, Steven Silas said, I'm trying to play three centers here, and that could be part of the problem in terms of roster construction. But let's jump back to Nathan real quick. You know, even given those limitations and given what we've seen here, what would you think the lineup that you would start with would be?
I think that Wood at the center for me for sure. I don't love Şengün as the starter because I just think like it's the same issue with the lack of spacing, especially if Tate's starting. That's just like kind of untenable to me. So I would play, I think at this point I would play KJ at the four and try to stagger him because I do like KJ with Şengün in those bench minutes. We've seen pretty good energy together. And I would honestly try and play Eric Gordon. People have said like, oh, you need him for the bench, but like you can just stagger them and bring him off after like 4 or 5 minutes. Like I do sympathize with Silas because like if you talk to all Rockets fans, we all agree the starting lineup is bad, and then everyone will give you a different starting lineup. So it's clear like there is no perfect answer here, and this is a roster construction with holes. But I think my priority now is basically just Jalen Green and giving him like space to operate and KPJ as well to some extent. So like my only real thought is like trying to pair him with shooters, which means Eric Gordon. If Eric Gordon can like not bring the ball up all the time like he currently is right now, and he's happy to just be like a floor spacer with a starting unit and then maybe like form into a more lead ball handler guy with a second unit. And then KJ and Christian Wood. That to me is like a pretty solid, pretty balanced team that might be bad defensively, but at least is like what this team was supposed to be, which was like bad defensively, but runs is fast and gets shots up and like actually kind of play some entertaining basketball where you can develop your guards, which are your most important prospects right now.
Yeah. How do you think that Garrison Matthews has done, you know, in the limited minutes that we've seen from him? And do you think, you know, continuing to get him time will help with the spacing and the rotation the way they are right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think I liked his minutes against OKC. I mean, he got a lot of shots up and he looked more comfortable shooting sort of off the catch and off. I think Roosh Williams made a really good point where like Amani Brooks isn't really shooting that well at all, or doesn't look comfortable kind of shooting off a screen where he's trying to rebalance himself in the air. And when we're talking about the roster construction and this team not having shooters, I think they thought Armani would be that guy, obviously, to come in and play and just shoot. And so that's been a real disappointment that he just kind of looks unplayable right now. So next man up, and Garrison is like a really good option to just come up and shoot. And he's competing, like in the few minutes we've seen, he's competing, getting up and down the floor and trying to get in the way of people defensively. I don't know if he can do much more than that, but like, he shoots and he's not trying to drive every time like Daniel House, so it might even be a better option than him right now.
Prod, what are your thoughts on Matthews? And you got into a little bit of the lineup stuff, but if you want to, you know, do any more clarification on the lineups, go ahead.
I mean, yeah, the lineups, it comes down to, does Tice have to play with the second unit? If he does, I'm starting Şengün and having Wood at the four. And then I wouldn't have Tate at the three. I would actually play KJ at the three and see how that works. We haven't seen that much. But about Matthews, I mean, I'm one of the biggest advocates for anyone other than Daniel House playing, because it's the opposite of a highlight reel. It's just terrible. He's easily one of the worst players in the NBA right now. So Matthews brings spacing. He is someone that people respect, even though he probably doesn't have the reputation that House should have, considering he's played for longer in the league. But people do respect his shot, and he is someone that's comfortable shooting most types of threes that you can shoot. And he's hustling on defense, and he's, even when he doesn't have the ball, he's not standing in the corner. He's cutting claw out. He's making stuff happen. And I feel like we miss people doing stuff like that. He's really confusing because we have a lot of vets that have played in contenders before, and usually they are good and they have that instinct of where they need to be on the floor at all times. And it just feels like there's very little of that with this team right now.
Well, he's trying to earn a contract, right? He's trying to like fight for his life to get a contract.
Exactly. I mean, when he signed here, his main argument, or at least the report, was that he had a two-way with Boston, but he asked to be waived because he wanted to search for a team that in which he would have a bigger chance of getting his contract converted. And the Rockets are very much that.
On that topic, right, you know, one thing I've been thinking of, but I haven't really verbalized this yet, would be, you know, this is Daniel House's last season, hasn't been looking great. Would either of y'all, or either both of y'all, what would you feel about, you know, potentially waiving House and then using, you know, that roster space to convert Matthews to a full contract?
Well, I think we've got plenty of time with Garrison left in the NBA. At least another month, so, or more than a month, actually, a month and a half. So I don't think there's any rush to do that. Daniel, I would like, we don't really have a lot of time because it's, like you said, it's his last year. Like, I feel a bit sorry for him. Like, he has been awful this year, but like, he's been better in the past. And I've been more down on Daniel House than I think a lot of people really liked him like a couple of years ago. And, you know, had these theories about what he could do, you know, every time he made a step back three or whatever, which was like once every 3 months. But like, so coming from someone who's never been a big fan of him, he's been better than this. So I think, like, I don't want to say give him a chance because I know how it'll go down, but like, he's clearly out of rhythm completely. He's been injured. He's obviously had some horrible personal stuff in his life over the summer. Absolutely. So like, I can easily see him playing better in, you know, 4 weeks time. It's just whether it's really worth it. If he's happy to like play 10, 15 minutes off a bench and get yanked pretty quickly, if he's not got it, then like, that's fine enough to me. I don't think he's kind of getting in too many people's way because we don't have many wings, like Prod said. So it's not as big of a deal as like him playing through as like a center or a point guard or whatever.
Yeah. Prod, go ahead and give us your thoughts on that, and then we'll go to a break for.
Yeah, I'm usually known for rash decisions, but I do agree with Nathan here. Like the two-way contracts stuck the same way they were last season, as in they're longer. They allow more days than they did beforehand, or what most people remember as a two-way contract.
Before so pre-COVID, we can probably
like shift him between the G League for some matches and the starting the actual team for another, and stretch him out enough to at least December 15th, if not the actual deadline. But he needs to, as Nathan said, be ready to get really limited time and only play if he's got it going, because right now he's a detriment to other players on the team, just because every single decision that he's been making has been bad. And while he might not be the getting in other people's ways,
speaking about House now.
Yeah.
You went from Matthews to House. When,
Sorry. No, I'm talking about House. Okay.
Yeah.
While he hasn't been getting in people's ways, as in I demand the ball, he has been getting people's ways as he makes really boneheaded decisions, and that brings the whole team morale down. When you see your teammate like have a wide open pass to a center next to the hoop and going for a dunk, or when your teammate isn't on the wing and decides to do a weird crossover into a really far step back three that's mostly an air ball. That stuff might not like be really bad for development, but it does deflate the team. And he needs to understand that just because this is a rebuilding team, doesn't need to prove he's some sixth man right now. He is what he is, and he needs to understand what he is.
For sure. So I think that was, you know, some good thoughts there on, you know, the coaching versus roster construction and kind of what the lineups have been. So we're going to head into a break here, and then we'll get into some X's and O's stuff with the offense. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And welcome back to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. Once again, we're joined by my fellow Apollo contributor and co-host Prodigy. You can follow him at Prodigy NBA. And our esteemed guest, Nathan Fogg. You can follow him at Nathan Fogg 1. That's Fogg with two G's. Thanks for joining us again, Nathan. In this segment, we're going to get into more of like the offensive stuff. Just a little behind the scenes. So, you know, we were talking about, you know, what segments we're going to do earlier, and we brought up talking about the offense, and, you know, it was Rob, you know, like what offense, you know, what offense are we going to, you know, talk about here? But there is stuff that is going on, and I want to kind of get into some of that here and, you know, what we think, what is going on and what we think should be going on ideally, right? Because one of the other things that you have to factor into this is they're playing so many different guys. You know, with Mike D'Antoni, they only played seven guys, but you knew what every guy was going to do, right? PJ Tucker was going to go stand in the corner every time. Trevor Reeves are going to go stand in the corner every time. James Harden obviously going to handle the ball. With the Silas offense, you know, it's a lot more – it's more freedom and it's less freedom at the same time, right, in terms of, like, guys have more ability to do different things within the flow of the offense But at the same time, that kind of limits what other guys are able to do. And that also kind of may not be the best thing at that moment, right? So we talked about in the last segment, Daniel House driving to the rim five times a game may not be the ideal outcome for some of this. And the same thing with, like, you know, Daniel Tice ending up shooting four or five threes a game. Like, that may not be the ideal outcome, but, you know, at the same time, that's what teams are going to give up. Then that's what you're going to have to take, right? So we've talked about the offense a little bit on this pod beforehand. We've talked about a little bit in the spaces as well. You know, it seems like Silas doesn't want to have like a super heliocentric offense and doesn't want to run a lot of like high spread pick and roll the way that, you know, MDA did. He wants kind of like a little bit more egalitarian stuff where you're having Şengün do a little bit of creation. You're having Jayshon Tate do a little bit of creation. You're having Daniel House try to do a little bit of creation and KJ Martin do some short roll type of passing and driving as well. You know, like we said, they're not running stuff that's super sophisticated. They're running a lot of stuff that's quick hitting. You have like some double drag stuff coming in semi-transition. You have a lot of stagger screens, some type of 21 action with, you know, KPJ and Jalen Green like coming out of the corner. It's a lot of stuff to try to get guys downhill. And what you're really running into is that teams are just going under. And the last game we did finally see, you know, Dort tried to go under on Jalen Green, and he was able to punish that by shooting a three kind of pull up. So that's what we're going to need to see coming forward. But, you know, Nathan, give us a little bit of your impression of what they've been trying to do offensively, and then we'll go from there.
Well, Silas is basically trying to run the Dallas offense, which he came in off the back of, you know, offensive coordinator of the most efficient offense of all time. So, like, it makes sense that he was like, oh, I'm just going to be Houston. It, because, you know, it made a lot of sense when we had James Harden, who could play like Luka, but probably better. And then it didn't make sense when we had Victor Oladipo and John Wall, but like it's mid-season, so it's hard to kind of like change things. It really doesn't make sense now that you're going into a year with like Jalen Green in his rookie year, KPJ, and like then trying three non-shooters in Jayshon Tate, Daniel Tice, well, Christian Wood is a shooter, so like two non-shooters. The reason why this offense was so good in Dallas is first because Luka Doncic is an elite decision maker, an elite ball handler and playmaker. And also because, like, their two big lineups. So Silas loves the two big lineup. But if we're talking about why this team has three centers, it's because Silas likes playing two bigs. He wanted Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins last year because he wanted two bigs. The most used offense Dallas had that year when we had the best offense in history wasn't, like, small ball or five out. It was Dwight Powell of a five and Kristaps Porzingis of a four. And, like, Powell would roll, Porzingis would pop. And Powell can shoot a couple of threes a game, but like you knew who was rolling and who was popping every time, and it still worked on these double drag screens and these stagger screens. You know, Someone cutting off a weak side screen. And like they had Seth Curry in one corner, who was like one of the best shooters of all time, and they had Tim Hardaway Jr. in the other corner, who was like one of the highest volume great shooters in the league right now. Like you just cannot at all apply the offense to what we're running with Jayshon Tate in the corner, because when we have five guys sit out around the perimeter, nobody's guarding anywhere near them. So like five out for me is such a spacing killer with this team. I hate watching five out because it results to swing the ball to someone and try and watch him break down his defender. And like Jayshon Tate can do that a little bit, but not a lot. And Daniel House really can't do that. Christian Wood can't do that on any sort of mismatch. And it's just this like pass to one guy, he tries to go, pass to another guy, he tries to go. And I don't think that's good for like young players. If you're trying to figure out, you know, I understand the argument of saying we don't want to like be too heavy-handed and they've got to figure this stuff out on their own, but like restriction brings creativity at times. Like you know, anyone will sort of tell you that if you've ever sort of tried to create anything. And like you can have sets and actions which you bring out. So Houston doesn't run many like set plays, or they don't have secondary and tertiary action where if something breaks down, this is what I would like to see them implement actually. So like if something breaks down, you go into this straight away. You go into that straight away. Because Houston's got the fastest pace in the NBA, but pace stats, and I think I'm going to do a blog on this, pace stats includes defense. So like they have the fastest pace because they're turning the ball over all the time and other teams are attacking us within 6 or 7 seconds. If you just go on offense, like how quickly you get a shot up on offense, Houston is like 17th. So like we have these young players and we want to play fast, but we're actually playing like one of the slower you know, paces in the league just on offense. And I think that's because as soon as the first action breaks down, there is just no like secondary thing to just roll into where it's like, oh, we've gone into a handoff now. We've got this floppy set. We've got like a get out of jail free card. We just don't have that. And I don't see how that helps the players, because that's still like a processing thing. That's still a decision-maker thing. It's just giving them some sort of guidance to like, here's what you can do. And like, if I can just finish this like quick rant, something that I'm really like disappointed in Silas has is like Mike D'Antoni wasn't a huge player guy at all with Houston. He kind of let them do what they wanted, but he had like three or four players in his back pocket where he could just get a guy a bucket. So like, one player, just it just popped to me today, this player who used to run for Ben McLemore, who like 99% of the time is just shooting off screens. But like, they had this play where he would curl in from a weak side and try to fake a back screen at the free throw line. But he would just kind of like keep going, and the defense is so used to him being like at the perimeter, they would just ignore him. And he would curl in for a layup. And it worked like most of the time, because like who scouts Ben McLemore back screen players? It's like such a low usage thing. And it's not like a heavy play, we're not running it over and over again, but it's just a little thing. But if you're like eight, if you're giving up an 8-point run or something, you can just try this one. It's like an after timeout set. It's just a little momentum thing, just gets you a bucket, easy layup, and then Ben McLemore's got like a little bit of rhythm. So I don't see any play where Silas has like something up his sleeve, you know, in his back pocket to just throw out, and that's really like, I think, damaging these young guards, because they have to do everything on their own.
I think you made some great points there. And, you know, going back to what you said about, you know, the Dallas offense was great when they were running Powell and Porzingis. You know, we heard when they brought Christian Wood in that part of that was Silas telling him that, hey, we're going to use you in this more Porzingis role. And I think most Rocket fans would probably agree that he doesn't really excel in that Porzingis role, right? Like, he is someone that can shoot. But Christian Wood, the value of him is really a pick and roll threat, right? When he was here with Harden for those couple of games, he looked like the best finisher in the history of mankind. And we haven't seen that even with Wall. We saw a little bit of it come back out, but you know, that Christian Wood hasn't made an appearance for a long time. And you can see that even though everything they've said is leaning more towards, we want to use you in that Porzingis role and, you know, get him some ISO touches and get him some pick and pop touches and things like that. Just the lack of him getting easy system buckets has really had him demoralized. And, you know, I would say that's part of the reason why he's having the free throw struggles, right? He doesn't get any easy plays. He doesn't get anything like just going right downhill against, you know, one guy. Their other teams are clogging the paint because there's no spacing threat. They're going under on everything when they're running these double drags and these stagger sets. Like, you're, unless Tice has gotten a couple of slips that have led to some easy baskets from KPJ. But other than that, like, the amount of low resistance actions and low resistance, you know, baskets that this team's getting, it's just not there. And I think Christian Wood isn't secure in himself and confident in himself enough to be able to just continue to play through, like, only having to, you know, fight and claw for all his points. He needs to get stuff that's easy. He needs to get stuff to get him in a rhythm. And, you know, we've seen that with Jalen Green too, right? Like, if Jalen Green can't, you know, get to the free throw line or, you know, get some easy shots early in the game, you know, it takes a while for him to kind of get reintegrated into the offense if he doesn't just hit some crazy pull-up threes early on. Like, that's really happened in the Boston game, and that kind of happened in the Detroit game too. He hit some crazy threes early on in the game and kind of got himself going that way. And, you know, I totally agree. We need to see these guys. If they can't get something on the first action, they need to have, you know, something on the backside that's getting the help defense, you know, engaged and not just standing there staring at the ball handler, clogging up the paint. Yeah. That was the problem against Memphis too, right? McGee was just standing there in the paint. Obviously, they're not going to call a defensive 3 seconds every time, but Jalen Green is just driving into JaVale McGee standing there with his hands up, and that's not a recipe for success for a young player like that. And you talked about the turnovers as well and what that means in terms of playing fast. It's your offense isn't going to be efficient when you're having to take the ball out of the net because the other team is scoring in transition the entire time. And, you know, the transition defense by this team has not been good. And when you're having that many turnovers, you're just taking the ball out. You can't run. And that's what they said they wanted to do early on. We want to be a transition team. We want to play fast. And I've touched on this a couple of times, but it feels like whenever Jalen Green gets the ball in transition, other teams are really just taking that Euro foul and kind of stopping him from getting any momentum in transition. They're letting Şengün run in transition more. And I think that's something that, you know, another thing that Şengün has slowly revealed to us that he's very good at is transition decision-making as well, because we've seen, as much as I love Tate, as much as I love KJ, when those guys are getting the ball coming downhill in transition, they really get tunnel vision. We saw there was a game a few games ago where Tate kind of got caught in transition a couple times and, you know, didn't really have anything to do, did not really have any bailout option. And KJ too, you know, KJ at least has the athleticism, you know, I can just try to take this and just yam on someone because I'm just a freak of nature athlete. But turnovers are definitely a problem, because when you're playing, like we said, there's all these obstacles where the offense isn't giving them any easy looks. And then you're starting the game. I think I saw a stat that it was 46% of the first play of the game, they're turning it over.
That's my stat, yeah.
Yeah. Incredible stat by you, man. But like this team is starting out bad literally half the time. And that's if they don't turn over, they could obviously go on to not score the first possession anyway, and you're still starting out in a hole. And this isn't a team that has the age or confidence or experience to be working back from behind. I mean, we've had the fourth quarter fake comebacks, but how many of those did you really think, you know, this is, you know, really going to get somewhere?
I think in some ways the offense has like gotten worse from Silas than last year, because last year they would do these like interesting, they would have a lot of variants on the same action. So they would have strong side guy, ball handler brings the ball up, and you'd have two screens on the weak side, and then a corner who would come off with two screens. Very simple, you just come off two screens. And then the next play they do it again, but then the guy comes off, curls around, and sets a screen for the other screener who then curls around. And it was all these like little disguises, and you could do the same set like 10 different ways. And they would do that. And like it would spring, Christian Wood would be set a screen for, let's say, like Eric Gordon. But then Eric Gordon would set a screen and Christian Wood would spring free for a pick and pop, or just, you know, just fading for a free. I don't see any sort of weak side disguise action right now, which is like really vital when you've got so many non-shooters being sort of like sagged off by the defense. And in that scenario, where I think we've really gotten worse.
How much of that do you think is like, there's a lot of young players. You think they're just trying to simplify the offense to keep all these guys, you know, able to be on the court? Or do you think, you know, they're just like, why do you think they're doing it that way? Why do you think they're not, you know, running some of those more like advanced, like elaborate actions?
I have no idea. I don't think it's the youth thing, because your young players are the ball handlers who have, you know, have the ball. This is all weak side stuff. So this is like Tate and Tice and you know, maybe like KJ or whatever. But, you know, we were doing it last year with a different starting lineup every game. So I don't really see that as the sort of reason. I don't know why. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Steven Silas hasn't noticed that or doesn't realize that, or like I've noticed something he hasn't, because obviously that's not true, but like they're just not doing it. And I think it's making the offense worse.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And I guess we'll see if they start to add some of that back moving forward. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's an oversimplification, but at the same time, it's not, in terms of turnovers and free throw shooting have brought this team down in a way that's just, you're not going to be able to overcome those things, right? Christian Wood and KPJ, those are your guys that are best at getting downhill, other than Jalen Green wasn't getting a lot of foul calls in the beginning, and now he's starting to get some more. But when your best two guys at getting downhill are able to get hacked because teams know they're going to go to the free throw line and miss, or, you know, they hack these guys, or they're really physical with these guys and teams are able to really load up on them defensively, stop the drives, be rough and physical with them and force a lot of turnovers. That's bogging down the offense as well, on top of, like we said, you know, not doing more elaborate actions and not doing more disguising and getting in these different sets. So it's just this perfect storm, this perfect concoction of all of these things dragging the offense down. And, you know, KPJ not having a great year to start out with, and his pick and roll chemistry with Tice is still developing. You know, I was at one of the games early on this year. I think it was the Portland game. You could see, you know, after these plays, KPJ and Tice were kind of going back and forth. I'm like, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. You know, maybe they'll be able to grow in their pick and roll chemistry. Maybe we'll get to see some KPJ and Green staggering, so that way, you know, Green can try to get some pick and roll chemistry. I think that's one thing that I would like to see, because you kind of touched on it earlier. You know, maybe having Eric Gordon in the starting lineup and then staggering that way. KPJ was out last game, so it was a little bit of different rotation. But, you know, how do you feel? We'll close the segment with this. How do you feel about how they've used KPJ and Green, and what do you think about them doing more staggering?
Yes, I think Green has – they've actually tried some, you know, some different stuff to try and get him going. They do a lot of Iverson cuts where you have two centers at the top of the paint in sort of like a horns formation, and then he kind of like runs laterally across them and try – and then because he's kind of shifting, he can change direction and pace. That's a pretty good idea, although it's not really working right now, to be honest. Like they'll do a zipper cut where he kind of like curls from a corner and up the paint and tries to get through there. So the idea that they're just like throwing it to him and asking him to sort of create by himself is not really true. They are doing some stuff and it will come off with side staggers. I mean, maybe you do ask him to bring the ball more himself so you can just like try and attack a pick and roll and pull up with his free. I think with Green, I actually don't have too many complaints, to be honest, with Silas and how they're running him. I just think he's adjusting to the NBA in the same way he did with the G League. Like, there's certain things that he needs to do better. Like, he tries to snake every single pick and roll he does, and he tries to put the defender on his hip, even though his greatest like strength is getting downhill with his acceleration. And like, you can see this is also affecting the pick and roll chemistry, because if you go around a screen, your center is waiting for you to attack downhill because he wants to stay parallel with you, and so you can throw the lob. So like, you'll see like Christian Wood has just stood at the free throw line because he's waiting for Jalen Green to go downhill, and he doesn't. He just kind of like goes up for a shot. So that's not on Silas. It's on the coaching staff to try and like adjust him to get out of it. That's just something he has to go through. And staggering would be great, but I think we have to remember, as much Green looked really good against OKC, given that playmaking, he's also looked quite bad playmaking by himself in the second unit. So I'm not saying that's like we shouldn't do that, because I think we should, but I think we have to remember that he's looked pretty poor playmaking by himself, and it's going to be a long process, I think, for him to develop that fine, which is absolutely fine. That's what we should do, but it's not like some answers in terms of like improving our offense necessarily.
Yeah, for sure. So I thought that was a great segment, great input. We're going to go into a break now. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of Knicks preview. We're going to talk a little bit about the spaces that we've done, some of the airspace stuff that we're going to do, and the Rockets watch party tomorrow. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And once again, welcome back to the Launchpad podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. For the last time tonight, we're joined by my fellow Apollo contributor, Prodigy, this new fancy Twitter handle at Prodigy NBA, and our esteemed guest, Nathan Fogg, Fogg with two G's, Nathan Fogg one on Twitter. So, you know, we talked about some lineup stuff. We talked about some offense stuff. So we're going to roll into a preview of the Rockets' next game, which is going to be a 4 o'clock start on Saturday. They're playing the New York Knicks, who are coming off of a loss against the Orlando Magic. So, you know, not playing the best right now, but also maybe reeling from that loss and wanting to get a win. You know, just doing a little bit of primary research on the Knicks. Their starting lineup has actually not done very well for them. And then what ends up happening is their backups will come in with a bunch of vets like Rose, Gibson, and those type of guys, and then they'll come storming back into the game. And so I think the Rockets as a team, you know, their starting unit has also not been very good. And then they've also been getting back into games when you bring in Şengün and you bring in KJ Martin and kind of get those type of actions running. So this could be a strange matchup in that way, where you have two starting lineups that, you know, don't have, you know, the best on off stats and some bench units that may be a little bit more prolific. So let's go to Prod first this time. What are your thoughts on the Knicks? How do you like this matchup? Do you see anything that may be problematic for the Rockets? Obviously, you know, we're struggling in general, so there may be a lot of problems, but, you know, anything that really stands out to you on that front, and anything you think that, you know, we may have success with?
I mean, the Knicks started off really strong. I think they won like five of the first six, and then the last four games, they have 3 losses and 1 win, and losses against bad teams. They lost to Orlando, and to some extent, Charlotte's also not a great team. I think it's definitely a team in a position where we could like steal a win, because it's a Thibs team, so they're supposed to be this really like abrasive, like mess with you on defense kind of team, really physical. But if you look at their lineup, like they don't have players that fit that too well now. They have Kemba Walker, they have Evan Fournier, these are not players that you associate with great defenders, and they are the guards. And Derek the Rose guards are well. Yeah, so these are not players you associate with defense, and or offense is so dependent on what the guards are doing that it feels like a perfect storm for one of the guys, or maybe both, to have a great game and maybe steal a win like that. But then again, it is a Thibs team. It is a team that likes to like have that defensive backbone and be really aggressive. And we've seen the Rockets struggle with teams like that, with the Heat and the Raptors. And so I guess like it's tough to predict the Rockets to win. But if this is one of the games that I think they have a legit chance at stealing one, that without beating the Thunder or the Pistons or the Magic.
Nathan, we'll jump over to you. Same questions. What are your thoughts on the Knicks generally, and what the Rockets may struggle with or have some advantages in different areas in this game?
Well, I think what you touched on with the bench units, I think this is a good opportunity to have Tice as that second unit, because like if Taj Gibson is kind of like hanging out of the rim, and the Knicks have had a good like rim protection with him there because he's kind of rolling back where he is, like you want to run pick and pop him out and force him to guard the perimeter. Daniel Tice just has to take the open shots. That's like just simply just has to, even if he has to take 6 in a row, he just has to do that. Unless we play Sengun with a second quarter, because he's going to be open a lot as well. And he, same thing for him, he has to just hit the open shot. So the pick and pop is probably going to be a big thing. The Knicks like to ice ball screens. Obviously, that's a classic Thibs thing. So, yeah. You know, side pick and roll, you're basically trying to force them to reject a screen. I liked how Houston attacked the Lakers when they did that. Basically, your center comes to set the screen and then just kind of fakes it and then just like backs out, and it kind of confuses the defense, and now the center is kind of like free for a three-pointer. So like, that's something they do with Christian Wood a lot, and I think that's something you'll probably see against the ice pick and rolls, where he just like comes and fakes and then immediately steps away, pass to him, and he's got an open shot.
For sure. And, you know, something that Prodigy got into a little bit that I kind of want to just go over again is, the Knicks have small guards, right? And the Rockets have really big guards, you know, KPJ and Jalen Green. They're guys that are a little taller, you have really good length and are very athletic. You know, Derrick Rose, circa 2010, you know, one of the most athletic guys we've ever seen. But, you know, Derrick Rose of today is a little bit more of a cerebral, vet player who's going to use some craft to get to what he needs to do with a little bit of athleticism. But I think Emmanuel quickly as well, right? You know, kind of a guy more in the build of a Jalen Green, you know, a little bit skinnier, a little bit slender. I think there's an opportunity here, kind of like what we saw in the Portland game, where KPJ and Jalen Green can really use that size advantage they have against the Knicks guards. Randall is someone who does present a lot of problems for us. We have Tate. Tate's a great defender, but he is a little bit undersized, right? So guarding a guy like Randall, who's very physical and very physical, and also presents, you know, a good amount of finesse and explosiveness, that may be a challenge for Tate. I'm sure he'll step up to that challenge and do his best job against Randall. But if Tate gets into foul trouble, you know, we really don't have that next guy that we're going to be able to put on Randall.
What about Tice?
Randall?
Yeah. On Randall, yeah. He was on Jokic. I mean,
I think Randall's a little bit more explosive than Jokic. I think we can say that. Yeah. So I think, you know, we did see Tice guarding Dame on a bunch of switches. So I'm sure they won't be afraid to give him Randall on a switch as well. And with Tice having better strength, I think that he'll be able to put up some level of a fight there. But, you know, as far as wings go, I mean, I guess KJ, maybe another guy you could try to get some minutes in there guarding Randall, but I think Randall could end up being a game breaker for the Knicks in this matchup.
I worry what he's going to do to Christian Wood if he's on him.
Yeah, no, I absolutely.
Yeah, Wood is not ready for Randall.
No. So, and I mean, they're going to be able to kind of hide Wood in some of these actions. And, you know, if you have Wood on Mitchell Robinson or, well, RJ Barrett is a little.
I'm not even ready for what Taj Gibson's going to do to Christian Wood, man. Yeah. Christian Wood.
Yeah, no, for sure. But, you know, I think this is an interesting matchup. You know, Mitchell Robinson is a very good rim protector. So, you know, we have guards that want to get to the rim. You know, Christian Wood, again, wants to get to the rim. The Rockets do take the highest percentage of shots at the rim in the league. So going up against Robinson does pose a certain level of challenge there. Hopefully they'll be able to get him in some sort of foul trouble early on and get him off the court. But overall, I think there's some things that will be interesting in this matchup. And like Prod said, I think, you know, given breaks a certain way, you know, obviously it's going to be the same thing we're going to hear every game, you know, don't turn the ball over to start the game. Don't turn the ball over 12 times in the first half. You know, let's get some more free throw makes and just stay in the game, right? We need games where we can stay in them to at least give Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. a chance to see what it's like to get that late competitive game.
Oh, you mean Sabine Eric Gordon?
I did not say anything about Sabine Eric Gordon.
That's what's going to happen. Did you just know it?
Yeah. So, you know, any final thoughts on this Knicks game? Nathan, we'll go to you first, and then Prodigy will go to you.
Not really. I just want to see the Rockets win a game. I do feel sorry for Silas. But clearly we want him to play the young players, but like he's coaching for a win. And I don't think he's necessarily coaching for a job, but I do think he's hitting some buttons right now in some sort of panic. So that's a very competing thing. Those are two very like opposing things. So I think he's in a pretty tricky spot right now, to be honest.
And we did see a report from the Houston Chronicle's Jonathan Fagan earlier saying that, you know, as for any disconnection between management and coaching, that does not exist. He also said that Silas should be safe. His job's not, you know, on the line, like kind of like we heard about Luke Walton the other day, that, you know, if they had lost the game against, I think it was the Wizards, I could be wrong there, but it was basically like you're coaching for your job on this one specific night. I don't think Silas is in that dire of a predicament yet, but again, you know, we've heard this kind of over and over again, and even from the reporter people that were in our space the other day, it's just very demoralizing to the entire organization to go on this extended of a losing streak, right? Like everyone wants to win. And no one wants to lose to this level. You're going to get a lot of losses with young players, but this degree of losing is just, it's very draining for everyone. And it kind of snowballs on itself to where, you know, you see these guys just hanging their heads every possession. And, you know, Christian Wood is being very animated when things go wrong. You know, Eric Gordon, obviously a guy that's been very animated, even in the best of times, but, you know, he had the press conference the other day that, you know, we'll say it was his, you know, this is crazy and I don't know if it can be fixed moment. So we'll jump back to Prod. You know, give us some of your closing thoughts on the Knicks, and then we'll jump into some other preview stuff.
I mean, on what you said about Fagan and him saying that Silas' job is safe, I don't know if the NBA is like this, but in Europe and in football, when you hear that, when the staff has to use the mouthpiece to say the coach is safe, usually the coach isn't safe. But we'll see. Hopefully it turns it around. If I were a Knicks fan, I would call this a trap game for sure. It's definitely 1-14, I think. It's definitely not one of those games where the Knicks circle in the calendar, oh, we gotta show up today. So maybe some complacency may take place. We'll see. It's also an important game for the Knicks. They're slipping into their seventh right now, but they're like only one win off 13th. The East is really close right now, so we'll see how that goes.
For sure. And I know everyone's going to be watching. It's going to be a Saturday, and we're kind of more personally, you know, Prod and I are coming off of doing one of the biggest spaces and some of the biggest content we've ever done this last week. We were able to have, you know, 950 people in our space. It was incredible. We had some of the beat reporters at Eco, Ali Khan, Spolane, and Salman show up and kind of do like an impromptu podcast in the middle of our space, which was really cool. We are going to be doing another space following the Knicks game, so be on the lookout for that. We've had some questions about, you know, doing a game, a space pregame. I just want to kind of touch on that. You know, it's very difficult logistically to get that done. You know, Prodigy's obviously overseas. Zeke and Brad are on the East Coast. I'm here in Houston for now, but I do travel a lot for work, for full disclosure. So it is tough to coordinate that because, like, behind the scenes, right, we're doing a high level of coordination, you know, developing lists of who's going to go next and, you know, doing a lot of moderation, stuff like that. So it is tough for us to be able to do a space pregame and then do the space postgame. I think for now we're going to stick with the postgame model. I think that's worked well for us. We are going to start trying to get into more stuff with airspace. We're working with David Liu, one of the developers for that, on trying to get that more integrated into what we do. And Prodigy had two great airspaces that came out today, and we were able to kind of blast those out on Twitter. He did one on Tice and, you know, how Tice has been doing this season and not being so negative on him. And also kind of what we touched on earlier, the Stone versus Silas debate on who's kind of responsible for the start of the season. So, you know, be on lookout for more of those, be on lookout for our space that we're going to do. And the last thing I just want to touch on is we are going to be going, the Apollo people, myself, Brad, Taylor Pate, Lashard, and Anthony Duckett are all going to be going to the Rockets watch party in Tomball, home of Jimmy Butler, tomorrow. So if any of y'all want to come out and see us there, feel free. We'd love to meet you guys. I've been able to meet a lot of people off Rockets Twitter in the last 2 months, and that's really been rewarding for me. Like I said, I do travel a lot for work, so when I'm in town, I love to get out and kind of interact with people. And it's cool to, you know, make these new friendships, right? Like Prodigy and I, and I know Prodigy and Nathan as well, you know, we've never met each other in real life. We're doing the Zoom setting right now, but, you know, to be thousands of miles away and to make these really cool friendships over basketball is definitely an awesome thing. And even to be in this level of losing, right, and to see the level of involvement on Rockets Twitter is almost as high as it's ever been, right? I think that's a really beautiful thing in terms of, you know, community building and staying tight knit as a Rockets Twitter community. So except if any of y'all want to come out and say what's up at the Rockets watch party tomorrow, I'll blast out the little banner that they did with the address and all. It's Little Woodrow's in Tomball for any of y'all want to stop by for that. And with that, I think that's going to do it. We'll go to Nathan first. Nathan, once again, plug all your stuff. Give any closing remarks you want to give, and then we'll jump to Prod. So.
No, like, thanks for having me on. And like, from a Rockets fan over here, what you guys do is just like amazing. And it's so cathartic after the game. I only catch the first half hour of the spaces because it's like bedtime for me at like 4 a.m. But I know you guys are working on recording it, so that's gonna be like a must listen on my train to work. Yeah. You can find me at NathanFogg1 on Twitter, T and Rockets, like the drink T and Rockets, for my blog where I do film study stuff. And then on my YouTube channel is T and Rockets as well. I'm doing a lot of draft stuff this year. I'm gonna be trying to do my first board of like my life, my first big board. So like that's something fun. That's not Rockets losing every week. So like check it out.
And me and Prod, we did our own board and we did a mock draft, Nick, last year. So maybe we can get in touch with you on, you know, having a combined board. We're going to have Dalton Pence. He was on our podcast the last time we did one. He wanted to kind of get in on doing a combination board too. So maybe we'll get touch base with you again and we can do like a combined board once everyone kind of fleshes theirs out.
Sounds good. Yeah, sounds good. All right. A lot of like early blowouts, which are leading to some crazy like Every game I watch, I'm like, this guy's amazing. And I'm like, it's because they're up 50 and they're not playing a real team.
yeah, definitely. That's why I definitely love to tune in for the games where you get a lot of those top talents against one another. You can kind of see what they look like against other NBA type of guys. But Prod, let's jump to you. Tell everyone where they can find you on your new shiny Twitter handle. Ooh, did we lose him? I think his mic might have died. Hold on, Prod. I think your mic might have died.
Wait, is it going
now? There you go.
Yeah. So I want to say you can follow me at ProdigyNBA. All my stuff finds its way there. It's either linked or on air or something like that. I wanted to touch on just really quick what you said about the community and everything. For a guy like me who, I'm from Portugal, if y'all didn't know, it's like 2 a.m. right now. What makes like the NBA special and the Rockets special is in fact the community. I became a Rockets fan because of Daryl Morey. because I liked how different everything is with American sports compared to European sports, the CBA and the draft and stuff like that. And when Morey left, I felt like, okay, I'll just follow Morey to the 76ers. And I spent like 2 days on the Sixers subreddit and on Sixers Twitter. And I immediately thought, okay, no, I'm not a Daryl Morey fan. I'm a Rockets fan because these people are amazing. And there's really no other fan base like our own. So at least... If you want to chill with us on the spaces after the games, you can come in, you can vent a little bit, you can see what other people think about the games, and it's always really fun.
Absolutely, and we are trying to get some new fresh faces on there. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me to kind of like quote unquote get on the list, but the next couple of spaces we do, we are going to try to get some different voices up there. So if that's something y'all are interested in, feel free to DM me. My DMs should be open, and like I said, we'll get some of y'all on that list and try to get some new people up there. But once again, y'all can find me at Don Knock on Twitter and on the Airspace app. That's AIRR. If you check my feed, you'll see a bunch of stuff because we're going to be posting a lot of that on there. You can follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. You can follow the Apollo main account at Apollo HOU. Like I said earlier, you know, we have a bunch of new Rockets gear coming out, and we have all the traditional Astros gear that y'all love and all the players wear and stuff like that. We had Justin Verlander just resigned, and they put out a shirt for Verlander. And like I said, the Shingun stretch big shirt just came out. So be on the lookout for those. That's going to do it for us tonight. Until next time, everyone stay safe and go Rockets.